A4.
Number 8B.
And she says, the idea of the rarefaction of thought as it ascends higher. You see how a soul that is characterized by the idea of resurrection, how she shows that an idea can rise and rise and rise, that the lesser unfolds to the greater. It's still the idea. So we don't have to have a feeling an idea is just that what it is at this moment, and that's that, and is eternally that. No, it's like a chameleon. Huh? Just call it a chameleon, that animal that changes its colors. Huh? It adapts itself constantly to the necessities of the situation, and therefore is ascending and ascending. Or if we take it from the point of view of principle, she would say, for instance, that at creation is the infinite idea emanating from mind. It's an infinite idea. It gives the sense of that enormous infinitude, and therefore principle is not found in fragmentary ideas. There is no fragmentation. There is no such a thing as isolated idea. That's perhaps one other indication. You see, an idea is not just something, an isolated identity. An idea has identity, but that identity is never isolated from the whole, and therefore is always expressing the whole in all dimensions, in all ways and shapes and form and offices and in everything. There's never an isolated idea. If an idea is not isolated, and we will come back to it in a few minutes, is always one with its principle, and therefore an idea always takes on the whole nature of the whole principle. It's not just one atomistic sense of that realm of principle. She says that God expresses in man the infinite idea, not just an idea, the infinite idea, forever developing itself. Again, that sense that the idea develops itself, broadening and rising higher and higher from a boundless basis. One just can see how that idea constantly transforms and overforms. I like that term, overform, which is not in the Webster. Unfortunately, let's put it into it. Gives the sense that an idea at one in one certain circumstance has a definite form, but that this form, the moment it is seen in another situation, takes on another form. It rises in the form, and so has an over-form. It broadens its form. It rises in its form. It rises from the lesser to the greater. That's why the idea of Christian Science broadens and broadens and broadens and rises and rises and rises. The idea of Christian Science, which we have today, is certainly something else than in the time of Kimball or Bicknell Young or Shaw Cook or anything like that. It's so much broader and higher and expanded and more structured, full of laws and categories of which one has never been thinking of 50 years ago. But why? Because the idea overforms itself. The moment one is able to touch the scientific nature of an idea, then science lends itself for constant unfoldment. If one doesn't touch the scientific basis of an idea, the idea will never unfold. It's only science that is able to build from some foundation that are correct, build up structurally, always higher and higher. Or we take a look at the idea from the standpoint of life, for instance. You would say that the new idea, that's in the passage on obstetrics, its beginning will be meek, so the idea is meek, or the impact of the idea in the beginning is meek. Its growth, sturdy, so the impact of the idea becomes sturdy, certainly something else than meek, and its maturity, undecaying. Can you see again, she gives a sense of the eternality of the idea, the birth of the idea, the newness of the idea, and says, the idea is always the idea of God. The idea per se is always eternal. and is always perfect. But in its impact on the human, it takes on the form of being a meek manifestation, afterwards a sturdy manifestation, and afterwards is seen to be an undecaying manifestation. So again we have a sense that the idea has its impact on the human and on our conceptions, and gives to the human conception a better sense of the idea. But the idea, I must point that out over and over, the idea itself is always complete. It's always God's idea. But because the idea has a Christ, the idea is not just a sense of a statement of the word, but the idea has a Christ. If the idea has a Christ, its manifestation as idea is so different. From the point of view of truth, one sees that the idea has consciousness, that the idea is conscious of itself, that it knows what it knows, that it knows what it is, and therefore illumines the universe with light. Finally, she says, love imparts the clearest idea of deity. Yeah, so I will come back again afterwards. If you don't mind, I just stay for a few hours on idea, because I feel that this must be seen in its proper light. It's quite interesting to see how Mrs. Eddy in the glossary explains ungodliness and says that it is opposition to the divine principle and its spiritual idea. That ungodliness is not just rejecting God, you see, but that it is also rejecting its spiritual idea. Opposition to the idea. Most of us have a feeling, well, we are not making any opposition to God because we are willing to study the synonymous terms, to study the textbook, which is all about God, and so feel, no, no, we have no opposition against God. We accept that there is God. We don't belong to them who say God is dead. All right, we are so much better. We accept God. But are we accepting the spiritual idea? That's quite a different proposition. Because the spiritual idea, as we have seen, is that idea which God has in view, which God wants to bring out, and that God has a spiritual idea, and therefore has a spiritual aim, and therefore is moving towards the fulfillment of that aim, and working out that aim, working out God's own idea. God uses ways and means and channels and situations which are foreign to common sense, which are foreign to the human sense, and therefore we are much more apt to oppose the working of the idea. We accept God, but do we accept the working of the idea? And that's what I see is much more important at the present stage. We have anyway not to do with people who don't accept God or that there is a God. So those are anyway not within our range of thinking. But do we actually make no opposition to the way the idea of God works? And that's usually the pitfall of the student. That the student has his, in quotes, idea, has his concept of the divine idea, and therefore feels that his concept of the divine idea is the right concept, is the ideal concept, and that it should work out that way. And whenever something happens which is not within that way, he feels either that he has to oppose it, to criticize it, or he feels very downcast and says, I don't make the demonstration, I can't make the demonstration, I have failed, not knowing that actually the right idea is at work. And so ungodliness is not just atheism. Ungodliness is something much bigger. It's the unwillingness to accept God's working, to prescribe to the divine idea the way it should work, to prescribe people how they should act and how they should operate. And my boy, if somebody doesn't operate the way the other people would like him to operate, he is in for trouble, for real trouble. We have not then seen that God has its own ways. Paul already said that, but he already could see that, that God's ways are not man's way. So let's see that the more we work in this idea, the more we should be willing to let the idea work the way it works. No matter if we agree humanly with it or not, we do not know what is right humanly. We can only know that if we let ourselves be used by the highest understanding of God, that that highest understanding of God will work as the idea in our lives. And we should be willing to accept that working of the spiritual idea. And then we would go somewhere. But as long as we think that the other should operate the way we think it is right, we'll only have friction, tension, and we will not operate together. So this is ungodliness. The moral sense of it is to say, be tolerant, but we can't just go back on the second degree. We just have to stay on the third degree, on the spiritual idea, and show that tolerance, not as saying, all right, you have your way, and I will be a Christian to you and tolerate you. No, it should be a very positive attitude, spiritual attitude, an understanding attitude, that God has infinite way to operate and that he operates the way that is completely contrary to the human concept. Then we have an affirmative, positive attitude to what's going on. And just are sitting there in wonderment of what the adventure of love will be, of how on earth that divine idea is operating in a way we have never been thinking about. Then we have really an adventure of love, seeing that the plane is working out in a completely different way than the human concept of it is. That makes us big. Only science makes us big. Even good Christian, moral, ethical attitudes don't make us big. They make us hypocrites, because we then show outwardly that we are tolerant and that we are nice, and inwardly we can't understand that this is the working of the idea. And that's not honest within ourselves. We should see, oh, golly, in this world of ours, where everything works so quickly, where everything happens so quickly, we just see how the acceleration of the divine idea, you know, takes on momentum and therefore uses the world in such a different way than what 100, 200 years ago we were used to see, and should see there is nothing going on but the divine principle and its infinite idea and its laws and their demonstration, and let's have it, let's accept it. Then we would resolve ungodliness. Therefore, what Mrs. Eddy says in regard to practice the idea, she would say that therefore we should accept the idea, how it works, namely to accept that all is divine mind or God and his idea. You know, I cannot understand when once one has seen that last chapter on the textbook, Apocalypse, and has studied that as a scientist and not as a religionist, as a theologian, if one sees that wonderful chapter, how that chapter shows that there is nothing going on in this world but God and his idea, wiping out all sense of duality, wipes it right out, and just shows in a structural way that nothing is going on but that divine idea on all levels of consciousness, right down to earth, right down to the seven vials full of the last plagues to be the idea of an angel. Then, if we see that scientifically, then we are big. That's why it's in that chapter where she said the idea is big. And we become really big in our attitude towards the whole operation of the divine idea going on right now in this world. She says that in practice we should arrive at the fullness of God's idea and no more fear that we shall be sick and die. And no more fear that evil has any power. And no more fear that something goes wrong. Then we get it. He says, when sickness and sin tempts you, cling steadfastly to what? To God and his idea. It is as if this is the universal solvent and rule Just stick to God and His idea. Why always see that things go wrong in the world and in the government and in the family and in the business and among friends and in Christian Science and in the movement and so on? Why, if there is only God and His idea? It only goes wrong in our concept because we like to see it different. But God isn't interested in what we like to see. He isn't at all interested. Mind has its own idea, and mind is only interested in its own idea, and not in the way we look at things and what we think should be done. Not at all. Let God run its own idea in God's own way and go with it, with that idea. And then we reap the fullness of that idea right here and now. There is no reason why we shouldn't be happy. There is no reason why we should not see the harmony of being right here and now. John the Revelator saw it, right on this plane of existence. He saw it. It's only a great question to see that all are states and stages of consciousness, as she says also in that chapter. And if we take on the right state and stage of consciousness, namely that which accepts the levels of consciousness, which accepts that the idea has not just one level of consciousness, but that the idea is penetrating every level of consciousness and every level of existence, if we accept that, then we are no more so worried about everything that happens in the world. Hold perpetually this thought, that's the practice, that it is the spiritual idea, also called the Holy Ghost and Christ, because the Christ is the divine idea, that it is the spiritual idea which enables you to demonstrate with scientific certainty the rule of healing, based upon what? Based upon its divine principle, comma, love. Can you see why she has to put in love? She couldn't just say based upon its divine principle. She had to see much more than that. She had to see that it isn't just the idea of principle that enables us to demonstrate with certainty. Because if we only rely on the divine principle, then we expect only the operation of the divine principle and not that of love. And love is that which says, I know. I love know what is the best way how it should be solved. And if we don't accept that must be accepted, then we expect that the divine principle works just principle in a principled way and not in a principled loving way. And the loving way is that love has a plan and that within that plan is the whole structure and all the dimension of experience. And therefore, love will choose those channels and those experiences, and those incidents in one's life, which is best adapted to bring out the solution. Oh, it's so beautiful when one reads the textbook with a scientific sense. Based upon its divine principle, love, actually we have to understand the term love. If we only take a moral sense of love, an ethical sense of love, a religious sense of love, where we understand under love only that sweet, sugary thing of love, you know, that it just brings everything in a sweet way, you know, a rosy pathway. But when we see love as something strong, you know, that love which says, you know, I don't let you go. And even if you resist me, I don't let you go. And I find ways and means that I draw you towards me. And even if that has to be through suffering, I do it. Trials are proofs of God's care. Love is such a bigger concept than the sweet concept of loving. And it says, that is what is necessary. That's the divine principle love that says, love says, I am going to work out the highest idea, what you call it, nilly-willy. Willy-nilly? I always say it the wrong way because I know I say it the wrong way and then I don't know anymore which one is the wrong way, you know. You have heard me so often that you don't know which one is true either. Yeah. All right, yes. Yeah, yeah. I don't want to tell you now a little story. Shall I tell you the story? All right, the story. Well, the story is that I have a student who has listened a lot to my tapes, you know, And when she was writing a paper for the university, the professor wrote on the on that paper, "Have you had a German background?"
Oh, you see, yeah.
All right, so we see this, that terrific statement, which says, what enables us really to demonstrate that idea? That it really shows that it must be based on the divine principle, love, underlying, and encompassing all true being. Why don't we trust that? Why do we make our life such a hell by criticizing people, by being unhappy about the situation, by not agreeing with other people and not agreeing with the world and the government and everything? Why on earth are we going to make a hell to us when we have here the pure statement of the true idea?